As millions battle hunger worldwide, where's God? When your family is suffering, when bad things happen, have you ever wondered what God is doing? To see God's providence at work in one man's life and how you can apply his story to your circumstances, stay tuned for today's Grace to You Weekend. To paraphrase a thought from the great preacher Charles Spurgeon, the keys of providence are in the hands of Christ. Nothing occurs here without his permit or decree. You know, it's true, everything is under God's control, so what does that mean for the heartaches that even believers experience? Why would a loving God allow bad things to happen to his people? Have you ever wondered or asked that question yourself? For a crucial and encouraging perspective on the providence of God, stay tuned for today's Grace to You Weekend as John MacArthur is looking at the life of Joseph, showing you how all parts of his life, his triumphs as well as his trials, fit into God's perfect purposes. Follow along now to the book of Genesis as you're able, and with today's lesson, here's John MacArthur.
Let's go to a third point in the story in chapter 40, A Forgetful Friend. It sounds strange, but everywhere Joseph goes, he's blessed. He was blessed by the love of his mother. He was blessed by the favoritism and love of his father. He was blessed by God in the house of Potiphar, so that Potiphar's entire fortune increased. Now he goes to prison, and he's followed again by divine blessing. Well, the story gets very interesting in chapter 40. The cupbearer and the baker for the king of Egypt defended their lord, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was furious with his two officials, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, so he put them in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard in the jail, the same place where Joseph was imprisoned. You wouldn't think that God was involved in Egypt in any way directly, but a plot surfaces. At first, it looks like this is collusion between the baker and the cupbearer to poison the Pharaoh. They go to the prison. There's Joseph. Verse 4, the captain of the bodyguard put Joseph in charge of them. Again, he rises to leadership. He took care of them. They were in confinement for some undesignated time. Could be days, weeks. Then the cupbearer and the baker for the king of Egypt, who were confined in jail, both had a dream the same night, each man with his own dream and each dream with its own interpretation. And it just so happens that there is another dreamer there who will turn out to be the greatest dream interpreter ever. Joseph came to them in the morning and observed them, and they were very dejected. He asked Pharaoh's officials who were with him in confinement in his master's house, "Why are your faces so sad today?" Then they said to him, "We've had a dream, and there's no one to interpret it." Then Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell it to me, please." So they tell him the dream, and Joseph interprets the dream. The message is this: you, cupbearer, you're going to be restored to your position in the palace. You're innocent. You're going to be fine. Baker, you're going to be hanged. Wow. And so that's what happened. Verse 21, the chief cupbearer was restored to his office. Verse 22, the baker was hanged. So the baker was the one plotting, and the cupbearer was innocent. It is clear from the text of Genesis that it is God who gives to Joseph the interpretation. Joseph can't read the future. Joseph can't predict the future any more than Daniel could centuries later when God gave him dreams. No man has the ability to tell the future. Well, you would assume that the cupbearer would have been a good friend to Joseph because Joseph had given him such a good interpretation. And so Joseph speaks to the cupbearer, chapter 40, verse 14. I just think this is so wonderful. Keep me in mind when it goes well with you. Don't forget me here languishing in prison. Do me a kindness by mentioning me to Pharaoh and get me out of this place. For I was, in fact, kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews. And even here, I've done nothing that they should have put me into the dungeon. That's a simple request, right? When you get back to the palace, would you just say a word for me? Look at verse 23. The chief cupbearer didn't remember Joseph, but forgot him. That's how the 40th chapter ends. He forgot him. So for two more years, he's stuck in that prison. But God had not forgotten Joseph, and God was not about to abandon Joseph, nor would God allow the cupbearer's amnesia to last indefinitely. Pharaoh is going to have a dream. And guess what? Pharaoh is going to ask for an interpreter. And guess who knows an interpreter who's accurate? The cupbearer. And that leads us into the 41st chapter and a famine. We've seen a family feud, a false accusation, a forgetful friend, and now we're introduced to a famine. Verse 1, it happened at the end of two full years that Pharaoh had a dream. You remember this dream, don't you? They're shocking. It's a shocking pattern of the skinny cows eating the fat ones and the skinny grain gobbling up the thick, plump grain. Verse 8 says, the next day his spirit is troubled. In the morning he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. This falls into the category of a frightening, terrifying nightmare. The images are rather benignly presented cows and grain. But whatever the form of this dream, it was a very, very troubling experience. Elements of fear had gripped his heart. He is deeply troubled in the morning. He gets the magicians and all the wise men, tells them his dreams, and there's no one who can interpret them to Pharaoh. No one. Then verse 9, the chief cupbearer spoke to Pharaoh, saying, I would make mention today of my own offenses. Pharaoh was furious with his servants, and he put me in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard, both me and the chief baker. We had a dream on the same night, he and I. Each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now a Hebrew youth was with us there, a servant of the captain of the bodyguard, and we related them to him. And he interpreted our dreams to us. To each one he interpreted according to his own dream, just as he interpreted for us. So it happened. He restored me in my office, but he hanged him, meaning the baker. Well, the alarming situation of Pharaoh showing up in the morning before all the people in his intimate circle jogs the cupbearer's bad memory, and he remembers Joseph. Pharaoh wastes no time in securing Joseph. Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph. They hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon, and when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came to Pharaoh. So whatever they were allowing him to do, he was still a prisoner in filthy clothes, unshaven. Change of clothes and a quick shave. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I've had a dream. There's no one who can interpret it. But I've heard it said of you that you can understand a dream to interpret it. So Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. So the king does what? He tells him the dream. Starting in verse 17, he reiterates the dreams. Both of them had the same kind of imagery. Both depicted some future reality. And what is the future reality? It is this. Joseph interprets the dream. You will have 7 years of plenty in Egypt, followed by 7 years of famine. That's what those two dreams convey. 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine. You need to be ready during the 7 years to prepare for the 7 years of plenty for the 7 years of famine. You need a man with administrative skills, management skills, to organize the storage effort, to make sure that you take those 7 years of plenty and save enough for the famine. Well, the king believed. And if you go down to verse 38, Pharaoh says, "Can we find a man like this in whom is a divine spirit? Is this not one of a kind?" So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has informed you of all this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and according to your command, all my people shall do homage. Only in the throne I will be greater than you." Wow. Is that an ascendancy or what? "You shall be over my house, and all my people shall be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you." And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." Verse 41. In a moment, all of Joseph's fortunes have been reversed. It's stunning. In the morning, he's awakened in a prison cell. At night, he goes to bed in a palace. 13 years earlier, he had come to Egypt as a slave. Verse 46 of 41 says he was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh. 13 years have gone by, and now he has become the second most powerful man in Egypt. Just a thought. The Lord had revealed to him the meaning of other people's dreams, but what about those dreams that he had that he told his brothers about them bowing down to him? What about those dreams? Well, they're about to become a reality. In a fifth scene that I would call a family reunion. We've seen the family feud and the false accusation and the forgetful friend and the famine that's foretold. Here comes the family reunion. Well, the good years end and the famine begins. And not only were the Egyptians themselves saved from mass starvation, this is huge. This is an entire nation of people. They are saved because of the dream interpretation of Joseph and their planning led by him during the 7 years of plenty. But multitudes of other people surrounding Egypt are saved from suffering starvation because Egypt has enough for them and enough for others to come and buy, and this makes Egypt richer and richer and richer. Joseph's foresight and careful planning literally could have saved millions of people throughout the Middle Eastern world. Well, back in Israel, they're being affected by the famine. This is where the story is so wonderful. They're being affected by the famine. Joseph's family's being affected by the famine. They ran out of food. Where are they going to get food? Verse 2, chapter 42. Jacob says, "I've heard there's grain in Egypt. Go down there, buy some for us from that place so that we may live and not die." 10 brothers of Joseph went down to buy grain from Egypt. Benjamin didn't come. There's grain in Egypt. Let's go down to Egypt. They went down, didn't they? And they went before Joseph, and his dreams were fulfilled because all his brothers bowed down to him. Just exactly as his dreams indicated. They didn't know who he was. He knew who they were. He gave them some tests. Do you remember? Go back, get your brother Benjamin, bring him. And then he did something quite interesting. They did come back. They did bring Benjamin. And then he instructed his servants to hide a silver goblet in Benjamin's pack when they left. And then stop them, search them, and find that and drag them back on the pretense that they had stolen this goblet to see if they were willing to let Benjamin go. The plan was arrest Benjamin, tell the rest of the brothers, "You can go, we'll keep him and punish him." The test was if they will give up their brother so easily, they haven't changed because that's what they did to me. Well, you know the story. They wouldn't give him up. And they all came back, and they all fell down, And through it all, of course, Joseph reveals himself. He reveals who he is. There's a wonderful embrace. The words, I think, that tell the story simply and magnificently, you have to go over to chapter 44. They come back. They're honest. They don't want to give their brother up. Go down into chapter 45. Verse 1, Joseph couldn't control himself before all those who stood by him, and he cried, "Have everyone go out from me." So there was no man with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. He wept so loudly the Egyptians heard it, the household of Pharaoh heard it. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph." I love that. "Is my father still alive?" His brothers couldn't answer, for they were dismayed at his presence. Joseph said to his brothers, "Please come closer to me." And they came closer. And he said, "I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. Do not be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life." God used Joseph to preserve the family of Jacob. They stayed in the land. They went back. They brought all their children. They brought their family. If you go over to chapter 46, verse 5, Jacob came, the little ones, wives in the wagons which Pharaoh sent to carry them. They took their livestock, their property, everything they'd acquired in the land of Canaan. They came to Egypt, Jacob and all his descendants with him, his sons, his grandsons with him, his daughters, his granddaughters, and all his descendants he brought with him to Egypt. When they got to Egypt, they were given the land of Goshen. They were there 400 plus years, and in that 400 years, they became 2 million people. And then they had a Pharaoh who knew not Joseph. And they turned him into slaves. And God brought the Exodus, and they went to Canaan. And the rest is redemptive history. God used this very unlikely hero to save his people. God did this to preserve your lives so there would be a nation called Israel, the witness nation, the nation from whom the prophets would come, the nation who would be given the scripture, the nation from whom the Messiah would come, the nation through whom the world would be blessed. Genesis 46, "I am God, the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt. I will make of you a great nation there." And that's what God did. Jacob died at the age of 147, but the nation became 2 million. Just in closing, chapter 50, and we'll skip. You can read it on your own. This is a beautiful ending to the book of Genesis. This is where we started and this is where we'll end. Joseph's brothers realize their father is dead. They take him back to the land of Canaan, they bury him. And now they say in verse 15, "What if Joseph bears a grudge against us and pays us back in full for all the wrong which we did to him?" Verse 17, "Please forgive, I beg you," this is their speech, "the transgression of your brothers and their sin, for they did you wrong. And now please forgive the transgression of the servants of the God of your father." This is what they said to Joseph. And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. His brothers also came, fell down before him and said, "Behold, we are your servants." Just what his dreams said they would do. Joseph said to them, "Don't be afraid. Am I in God's place? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good." Is that not a glorious principle? Whatever happens in life, whatever people intend, God orders it for his own children for good.
Listening to John MacArthur here on Grace to You Weekend. He's the president of the Master's College and Seminary, both in the Los Angeles area. His current messages are looking at several of the Bible's most unlikely heroes. Today's focus on the Old Testament character Joseph. John, the last few weeks, as you've looked at the great accomplishments of Joseph and Enoch, this question comes to mind. Would it be accurate to say that these heroes are not really the main characters in their stories, but in a sense, their heroic deeds aren't theirs?
Yeah, they're not the main characters in their stories. God is the main character in their stories. There are no human explanations for the exploits of these people. When I decided to put this book together, 12 Unlikely Heroes, I looked for people who would never be the explanation for what they were able to accomplish, so that it would be clear that this was the work of God. We brought together 12 most amazing and remarkable people that stretch from early in the book of Genesis all the way through the New Testament and show us how God works through the lives of very unlikely people to literally change the course of history. The publishers have not been this excited about a book in many years, at least not any book that I have written. They are very enthusiastic about the thrill that people are going to have to read these stories. I know you've heard Sunday school stories about Enoch and Joseph and Miriam, Gideon, Samson, and others, but we're coming at those stories in a very different way. You're going to love reading those stories, those familiar names, as well as about John Mark and Onesimus and John the Baptist and James, the brother of Jesus. The book title in full, 12 Unlikely Heroes. The subtitle, How God Commissioned Unexpected People in the Bible and What He Wants to Do with You. Get a copy of this brand new hardback book today from Grace to You. Again, 12 Unlikely Heroes.
There's much to learn from the characters in this book, both for their obedience and faith and the power and providence of God. To pick up John's new book, 12 Unlikely Heroes, contact us today. This book is reasonably priced and shipping is included free. To order your copy, go to our website, gty.org, or call our toll-free number anytime. It's 1-800-55-GRACE. Again, the title of John's latest book, 12 Unlikely Heroes. Order online at gty.org or when you call 800-55-GRACE. Now keep in mind that John is still preaching these unlikely heroes at his home church in Southern California. You can download each message free online at gty.org or sign up for what's called the Free Pulpit Podcast that gets you John's new Sunday sermons just a few days after he preaches them. MP3 downloads and the Pulpit Podcast are yours free at gty.org. By the way, friend, if you're grateful for these lessons, a broadcast that you've heard recently, maybe John's series on spiritual warfare or the study on Whose Money Is It Anyway, let me encourage you to get in touch with us. You can do that by email, letters@gty.org, or through the regular mail, Grace to You Weekend, Post Office Box 4000, Panorama City, California, 91412. And now, for John MacArthur, I'm your host, Carl Miller, with this reminder. You can see Grace to You Television Sundays on DirecTV Channel 378, or watch online at gty.org. And then join us right here next week as John continues unleashing God's truth, one verse at a time, on Grace to You Weekend.